pals o' mine. I'm Julie Parker, and this is Conversation Accessories. Over three decades ago, Madame Chinchilla and Mr. G created the Tattoo Triangle Museum, which also serves as a tattoo parlor and their home. It sits on the second story at 356 North Main Street in Fort Bragg, California, which was built in 1907 after the original structure was destroyed in the infamous 1906 earthquake. A narrow stairwell leads you up to the museum, comprised of small, intimate rooms with walls and display cases lined with photographs and eclectic memorabilia. Madame Chinchilla and Mr. G are not only business partners, but personal partners as well, which you'll probably pick up on during the virtual tour they provided for this show.
On each side of the stairway is examples of patriotic tattooing. On the right is the Navy. On the left are the other services.
Now we're at the top of the stairs. It keeps going straight ahead, and we turn off to the right. Mm-hmm. So which direction should we go first?
I think we should turn to the right. Now, some of these images that we just came through, those have been around for 400 or 500 years. Some of the ships and the women images.
The Navy?
Yeah, Navy and actual merchant marines, whalers and old shipping companies. It was because people were at sea for so long, they had images of land and home, and that kind of was a sentimental thing for them to do. So in about the 1600s, people started doing tattoos that they had just seen in South Pacific. There's a lot of imagery here that's beyond patriotism. It's also of an old wayfaring sort of lifestyle where you didn't have art or other mementos. You had tattoos. The next little room we can go into is this main entry. What I usually do with customers or tours is take them on into Chinchilla's room. We start at the far end.
And let's look at the big... The shoe chair, the leopard shoe chair.
Oh yes,
come on.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, that's from IKEA, right?
It's very useful. No, it wasn't from IKEA, but it's very useful for tattooing different parts of the body.
Like because if there's no armrests, and it's probably easily accessible.
You can lay on it. There are projects going on all over the place here. That's why everything is akimbo.
This is Chinchilla's room. It's the women's themed. It's all the women that she's tattooed, plus cutouts from National Geographic or coffee table books, and then photos from her travels. Mostly to India. This is the last time she did a lot of photographs. A few from Thailand and Burma, but mostly India. But
Java.
32 years of photos.
And what are these little statuettes, these figurines right here?
These are passed on from my mother.
And where did she obtain them?
Probably at an auction. Yeah, I don't know much about them. Probably Chinese. And they're probably bone.
Yeah, they're...
Maybe they're ivory and we don't know it.
Oh, they're pig bone.
If so, we apologize to the animals.
Oh, yeah, those animals were eaten 20, 30 years ago.
Probably more than that.
And you have a case full of smaller figurines.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a variety.
Yes. Well, these figurines have the Maori Moko. Do you know what that is? The natives of New Zealand are called Maoris, and they have significant tattoos, especially the women have significant chin and mouth tattoos that all represent different aspects of their life, who they are, where they're from, what they do, how wealthy they are, things like that. The men have the moko, it's called a moko. The men have it all over their face, their entire face. Every line is significant. So I thought it'd be rather
fun
to just put mokos on all of these little figurines because it gives me great pleasure. I needed to laugh.
I was looking to see if you have any mokos on the wall here, and there's one.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Well, that's a different, that's from Burma.
Here we go.
Oh,
yep.
There's the real moka there.
There's, yeah.
There's some Moroccan tattoos there. That's from Berber tribal tattoos.
Yeah.
So, and then there's some up here from a friend of ours, and this is from the Philippines. So tattooing was part of every culture. It's never been stamped out. Different times in history they tried to stamp it out because it was a sign of rebellion or non-submitting to the culture or the dominant invaders, and they wanted to wipe the cultures out as they invaded. But it's been around forever.
Well, I like that this room is devoted specifically to women and the tattoos over the centuries of women in different cultures, different tribes, including contemporary.
Mm-hmm. That's what I like about this wall. Everything, all of us are together. These are all my sisters, your sisters. And they're all together. They're from here and there and then and now.
I was looking down at this one. It's very interesting, too. That's from the Mojave Desert.
Her story is well known.
Right. And it's been rewritten a few times, which from puritanical angles. And
we're talking about the photo of Olive Oatman. And if you aren't familiar with that, listeners, you should Google it. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
So let's move further into the room here and see what else you have on the walls besides photos.
Oh, there's a lot of fine art.
Is this an altar of sorts?
Yeah, our life is full of altars.
That contains ashes from different people that you've tattooed ashes into their family. And that's kind of like putting them up a little higher.
This little tin.
Yeah, she has some ashes that she's kept here from different ceremonies that she's done. We kind of started that. We kind of pioneered that in Western culture because we were in Thailand and Burma. We started researching old tattoos there, and that was part of passing on energy from ancestors, where after someone passed, because they cremated them, they would take a piece of flesh and hold that flesh in their mouth and bite on it and then tattoo the person with magical tattoos. So we were thinking about that a little bit, and we thought ashes would be a great way to do that because tattoo pigment is made from ash.
Actually, I was just speaking to a woman just the last couple of days who had the ashes of someone that she loved into a tattoo. Burned into her skin. Last couple of days, someone was telling me she had done that.
So that's a modern ceremony taken from an ancient concept. Very interesting. It's very, I have some older research books from the 50s that talk about it's called Monks and Magic, and it was done by a Swedish institute, but they were talking about the prayers and some of the ceremonies in the jungles. That was just very interesting to think about the pigments. Pigments have all kinds of talismans mixed in and energy. They keep both in the temples and in the shaman. They keep their pigments in a nice altar. And that's why she has her pigments up there. But that's where the magic comes from, is the pigment. And then through the person that's doing it.
Well, let's move on to the next one.
Okay.
So this is our main studio, where we have guest artists and one, what would Nikki be called, resident artist.
I call her the captain of the ship.
Yeah, she is.
But this is where we do most of the tattooing and appointments. There's two stations, and we've had three stations at some times up here.
We have people from all over the world come here and tattoo. And the art that you see on the walls is all from the people that were our guest artists.
Or visit. Yeah, we have, and some people travel, like this person here, Dorian Serpas from Nicaragua, but then he tattoos in Italy. And this fellow over here does these beautiful posters. He's from Switzerland. People just lay all this cool stuff on us.
A lot of international energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And it's funny, they make a trip here to Fort Bragg. Always very flattering to have people come in and visit. We had some people from France here just a couple hours ago. And
several people from Russia and a couple people from Poland. Mm-hmm. And that's just in the last month.
And speaking of traveling, I see some vintage suitcases up there with some colorful decorations.
Yeah, they're kind of beyond vintage. They're, what would you call them?
Folk art.
Yeah, it's the epitome of folk art.
Captain Don was one of our mentors. He ran away with the circus when he was 13 and grew up in the circus, so he's passing on some of the graphics from the circus and the style of painting trunks, and they always did a lot of painting of everything. It had to be decorated kind of wild and crazy.
Flash.
But one of these...
They're fun. I love them.
Oh, yeah.
There was just an exhibit in Chicago at the Museum of Natural History. I think it was the right word for that. But one of these suitcases was one of the main exhibits there.
Nice.
And my niece and nephew went to see it. And they were like really amazed because they knew we knew Captain Don. So I took a photograph of just... This is just half of that collection. We have a whole locker full of Captain Don, which we're real lucky to have that. Some of this art I'm looking around, it's just so nice that people gift us these things. It's just wonderful. It keeps us
inspirational,
inspired.
Not just for you, but for the visiting.
Oh, yeah.
It keeps us inspired. And when they come to visit, sometimes it's slower than they realize because it's not a city. And it slows down at night, so they camp here sometimes and they just do art for the whole visit, maybe a week or two. At the end, they'll give us this paintings, which are amazing. So I like that tradition.
Great deal.
So well, the next room.
Next room, where are we going now?
Well, just go into the entry, the main entry, and this is where we show the designs, and the designs are called Flash. And they're traditionally, they started out in art books. You know, the travelers, we're talking about the old whalers, and they would have a little foot locker with some drawings in a like a tablet or journal. And they would do all their drawings at a certain size. And some of those are still around from the late 1800s where they were traveling. And that was just easy and portable to carry. But they call it Flash. And the Flash part comes from the circus and just making a little more colorful and eye-catching is a good word. But there's a whole formula for doing it. It's passed down. That's part of your apprenticeship. You learn how to do the art on the paper. And there's lessons to be learned. And they used to do it with quill pens. So you pull your lines a certain way. So when you tattoo, you're doing your lines a certain way. When you look at them, you can tell that they're taken from popular advertising, like pipe tobacco or images from different drinks or beverages. So up here are some posters that we made for a magazine for Centerfolds and a tattoo magazine.
And for seminars that we've done.
Yeah.
And exhibits.
Those are from our collection. I think there's six of those. That was fun to do. It's fun to learn how to do Photoshop, although I forgot it as soon as we were finished.
It's like studying for a test. You know, just long enough.
Uh-huh.
This room is like, for the person that's never been in a tattoo studio, it's like the shopping mall for tattoo designs. There are so many designs here that it's mind-boggling. And people used to always choose from our Flash.
Which is these racks here.
Yeah, but not so much anymore. They do choose from here.
And the racks are, for my listeners, are similar to the old shopping posters.
Right. The poster racks were where they started.
Yeah. From. And those encompass every image, every feeling, everything having to do with life and death and all that throbs with a vibrant force between.
Mm-hmm. And ice cream and cars.
Yeah.
Everything. Little bluebirds, everything. So, and this part of the wall is our musicians' wall. Some of the musicians we've tattooed, and there are two more famous people up there. One is Greg Allman, which we both tattooed the early 90s, I think. Mm-hmm. And then the other young man here who's passed is from the Deftones.
He was from Sacramento.
Yeah.
That's Chi Chang. He gave us those gold records. He was like our godson.
Okay, let's continue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where are we going next?
I'd say this room here is the next one on the tour. So this room is dedicated to Captain Don and the Circus Sideshow. I mentioned earlier that he was a mentor of ours. So he started out just feeding the horses and cleaning out stalls and elephants. And he had a great affinity for elephants. So he has a lot of elephant tattoos on him. And he became a sword swallower in 1958. Started becoming what they call sideshow act. And he probably could do 12 or 13 different acts. So they would make more money. The more acts they could do, the less they had to share it with other people. So if you could do 10 acts, that saved them of hiring a few people.
There's even a sword swallowing anatomy guide.
Yeah, and some big words in there,
How do
right?
you swallow a sword? Very carefully.
And so some of these images are from the 1930s, and that was the neat thing about Captain Don was he worked with people that were in the circus in the 1880s, 1890s, and then he worked with people that went clear through the 20th century, and he was still alive in the 21st century. Some of these people that are on these old Ringling Brothers sideshow photographs, he actually babysat with those two people and was very good friends with the Harry Dahl family, also the Giant. He used to go to Gibbetown, Florida, and visit with them. And the Giant had a home built to fit him, and the Dahl family had a home that was tiny to fit them. Yeah. Just a lot of old things that aren't around anymore, which is outdoor entertainment.
So those were his boots?
Those were
Oh
his part
yeah.
of his act. Yeah, he always
His
wore those.
gold glitter boots with tassels and that coat jacket,
That coat jacket.
purple, violet
Well,
colored.
that belonged to the
Willenda.
Willenda, the
Willenda
great
family
Willendas.
that do the tightropes, that just did the Niagara Falls and the buildings in Chicago. That was their grandfather's jacket.
Wow.
And they had a fall in Detroit, I think it was in 1959, and Captain was in the circus with them. Those costumes were considered bad luck because they had a really bad fall. And so they cast those away. And Captain Don was gifted that in Detroit, is where it happened. There's so many old other people. Go on in and I'll show you
We're going
some other people that
little
we're talking
deeper.
history. Tattooed, some people that these are their grandparents. This lady right here, Princess
Beatrice.
Beatrice right here. This woman here, I tattooed their granddaughter. And her grandfather was a tattoo artist in 1907, even earlier. She survived the Galveston tidal wave of the earthquake there, or hurricane, and they lost everything. She lost two children. Post-traumatic is what it was. He kind of took her in, and they went to South Africa at the beginning of the Boer War, before World War I. Here's another picture of her. She had the Last Supper on her back. Very interesting history. But so the woman is from Chicago, but she lives in Phoenix now. She comes once a year and gets a tattoo from her
Her
grand.
granddaughter is who we're speaking
Yeah.
about that lives
So
in Phoenix.
she gets a picture from her grandfather's little book that we're talking about, but his art book, and she'll pick out images from his art book.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. This man here is Jay Lester, and his family lives in Chico, and he retired to Chico in probably the early 60s, and he was tattooed in the teens and 20s. We're going to go over and go through his old circus trunk real soon this
Wow.
winter. Yeah, so that's real exciting to go see that.
Fun spelunking.
Yeah, well, and just getting a story that's different than what we know, because there's a lot of these tattoos which were done by considered one of the masters of tattooing as George Fosdick from Portland, Oregon. All these people represented here have a great story, great lives. I mean, some of them had a few tragic stories, but they were very independent. They were very wealthy for the time. They were like rock musicians or something.
But real discreet. When you'd see them in public, you'd never know that they were totally tattooed or in the circus sideshow.
This is the holy grail of tattooing and circus sideshow. That's Captain Don's sword that he got when he was gifted to him. He had that since from the age of 18, I think, until the day he died, and he gave it to us.
To
And
share with
that's
everybody.
an Emerson Civil War sword.
Wow.
And they cut them to a certain length there that would fit his stomach. You can't have them any longer than your stomach. It's just going to create problems like bottoming out. And
Yeah, that would be a problem.
yeah. So, yeah, the swallowing of the sword is not a trick. It's just a skill, and it's not for everyone. It's very painful. You have to push your heart aside, and I don't know if you've ever swallowed something that you didn't want to swallow, and it's very painful going down. So he
The
had that
cornea
in the latter
also.
years. He didn't swallow anymore. He'd cut himself in 92 at an art show in Seattle. It took him a long time to swallow after. It was just so painful.
It usually doesn't come up in career counseling.
No. And so Captain Don had cancer, esophageal cancer, and so he went to the doctor in Chico, And the doctor remembered Captain Don from being in a medical book because when he lived in Boston, he swallowed for some research on esophageal devices, like for pumping the stomach and everything. And they had photo, I think we have a photo in here somewhere, an x-ray of him swallowing a device. And he's still in the medical books. And then, yeah, there's some more costumes of his. And so this is where I tattoo in here.
So this is Mr. G's
Mr.
Face.
G's room. And in every room we've got pictures of friends, and there's a lot of Japanese pictures here, and we're close with the tattoo masters in Japan, and one is the Horitoshi in Tokyo, and the other one is Horiyoshi the Third in Yokohama, and they've been to Fort Bragg and visited and stayed with us and tattooed here, and we take all the furniture out, put mats down, and they would do tattooing here. My whole theme is
just
bikes,
too hot.
Babes and bikes. Yeah. And yeah. Chinchilla has the women's thing going on. So.
And you even have a mouse trap that's painted.
Oh yeah, that was, Chinchilla is always doing something. She had an art show
an
with rat traps.
That.
You'll see them every once.
Yeah. In here, you'll see it. You'll notice that there's a lot of squirrels.
That has nothing to do with tattooing.
It has everything it's to just, do with the tattooer.
Yeah, it's just exactly. A joke because people have those collections, you know, the owls or seagulls or whatever. It's like I just thought one afternoon I'll get a squirrel collection going on. But some of these things are real antique. They're up there in the corner. Keep them out of reach so they won't get stolen. Those are some of the fathers of American tattooing up there. It's like Jerry Pope, who taught Sailor Jerry how to tattoo. And there's Bert Grimm's shop, which he's considered an American master. Actually worked with a Wild Bill Cody at Circus Sideshow, the Wild West show. And there's some from England, some from, this is from World War II.
Pre-World War II.
Yeah, and it went through World War II.
It looks like it.
Yeah. It was in Hong Kong. It was never taken care of. Actually.
Well, I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's not much left of it.
Well, metal was so rare or so scarce that it's paper-thin metal and just flexed so much that it popped the paint off of it. But you can still make out the image and also the part of engraving because tattooing always didn't pay the bills. You had to have a photography or make name tags or engrave.
To supplement.
Yeah, engrave little mementos to send back to your loved ones, you know.
Now, the tattooed lady, that looks like something that would be at a circus or a sideshow.
Oh, yeah. That woman I was mentioning before, they would always have a show business name, and that's, you know, like Princes or whatever.
Or Madame.
Madame. So, yeah, that's our show business names. It's kind of just carrying on the tradition of being outdoor entertainment.
And it's a traditional circus banner that Captain Don made from scratch. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a whole key to that with the colors, understanding that you always have an orange outline and then you have the gray and purple, the little wild things on there.
It's like a moco. Everything is significant.
Yeah, like the little circled in the corner, alive.
Yeah. Amazing.
But alive is pretty funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Electric tattooing. Electric. I always liked that.
There's one thing I forgot to mention in the circus sideshow hallway that I think is very interesting. Every time that the circus pulled into a new city or town, Captain Don or someone in the circus would go to the insane asylum or what are
hospitals,
those places?
Orphanages?
Different
I don't
places, yes. I can't even think of the word, but that's where they found the freaks.
They're always searching for another act.
Huh? The pinheads or whatever, and they would offer to give these people a life and take care of them, and that's what they did. And it was in the 60s that that became illegal, and they couldn't do that
anymore. Well, they
anymore,
thought it was
so
inhumane.
They went underground.
Yeah, I've read some books and interviews of those that performed, quote-unquote, and they said that they lost their livelihood. Now, all of a sudden, they had to fend for themselves, and they weren't
they
sure
were
how to do that.
They were angry over being protected. They didn't want to be protected.
Well, they got to work underground a lot, though, too. The little people, they were safely ushered from here to there and would do shows where not everybody knew about it, so they could be viewed.
So what room are we going to visit
next?
We're
going to go into the beginning, into the worldwide tattooing.
Worldwide.
Yeah, these exhibits overlap too.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Because I wanted to point out the Bali drum, which doesn't even, a lot of folks wouldn't even know what a Bali drum is, but it's just a way of drawing attention to the sideshows when they're out on the stage, because people are so loud and talking, and so it's just a part of outdoor entertainment. So this is like a little hall of fame in here.
And on the frame of the doorway they're walking through is framed with dominoes, because why not?
Yeah, really. So this is our in-memory section as you come in. And it has people that we care about. There's my mother and my best friend and Captain Don, people who have passed on.
So in here, this is still like Western or American tattooing here.
Not all of it.
No, not all of it. But because I think this is some of the oldest designs we have in there. These are 1890s, 1880s. And this, what's really sad is some of these things are unknown for a while. Researching for that, I'm always looking for some of this blue artboard, and I'm looking for someone that did the yellow scallops. There's other things to look at, like the kind of lines they did and how they rendered them, but I'm looking to see if I can find the artist for that and find one that's signed so that you could
to identify
it to, yeah, to compare it to.
So in this little display case, these are all different needles over the...
Those are the machine heads or the machines that reciprocate, and they're electromagnetic.
But how many would you say are in this case on display?
About 50, 60. The top row are the ones that I've designed and made up here. And then some of these are antiques, and a lot of these were donated by different people. Some of these are reproductions of really old ones from the early 1900s. And then interspersed are real old ones that just no other place to put it. That's the beginning of electric tattooing, and that started in the 1880s. That's a good segue right to there. So that's one of the first electric motors up there, and that's by Thomas Edison, 1876. And it was trained to make a document reproduction to make a fast copy, where you can send out letters or signatures, and they would have a silk screen process, and it was done on real fine silk. We have this one, and a fellow bought it in 1920 and tried to tattoo with it, but there's only 19 of these in the world, these machines still in existence. And we have two of the boxes that you'd have a whole portable printing system in there, and that's pretty fun stuff to look at.
But it's not in here.
No, we can't put everything in here. We wouldn't be able to get through here. But so some of these older designs, some of them are the real deal, and then we've moved some of them so we don't have all our eggs in one basket. Some of it's reproduction. And
now this cabinet looks like you just have miscellaneous cool stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah,
some
Popeye.
Popeye collection. Spinach cans. I've never seen a spinach can with Popeye on it. That is fabulous.
And then this part is from Sailor Moscow David from Israel, who's encouraged us and donated so many things to our museum.
He had a museum in Israel.
Up in Israel, and that's him when he was younger. He used to tattoo the military that would come into Israel, but he gave us his used passport, the key to the shop that he closed down when he moved to Bangkok. I mean, everything. His camera. That's just some of it.
And these are prison tattoo machines on this row. And those were given to us by different guards, I guess. Correction officers.
That we've tattooed. They said, oh, we've got a lot of those, you know, because they confiscate them.
That goes from like one world, and then over here we're going into another world. This is the ancient methods here. So these are all pieces of equipment that they would have used to tattoo thousands of years ago, and they still use them in some cultures from Borneo and New Zealand. And then these are from Burma and Indochina, all over. They call it Indochina, but those foothills from Tibet down into the Mekong Delta, as a whole, down into Indonesia.
And Mr. G has been tattooed by some of the most brutal instruments you see right here.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Yeah. Like, I can't even imagine.
Well, yeah, not always. It's more of a rite of passage than a fun thing, and it was a great experience. That's the neat thing about tattooing. A lot of times you do get a magical high, or it doesn't even have to be magical. It's a physiological thing happens. It's like acupuncture. So when you violate the skin, it sends out
a transfer
that makes adrenaline, dopamine, all kinds of other things that are cool, make you happy.
Okay.
Make you silly or whatever. Some of these things we were talking about earlier are these Mori tattoos. And then part of being around so long is people donate this. So this came from the museum in New Zealand. And they gave us these prints.
From Auckland.
Mm-hmm.
This whole wall here is South Sea, mm-hmm. South Pacific tattooing.
And what are these numbers up here, these large?
That's from the Japanese calendar 1 year. That's from a tattoo club in Yokohama. And they just did that for kind of show off their tattoos. And it was in a calendar and we cut it up and put them up there. So
it's gorgeous.
Those are all members of the tattoo club there.
And we know many of them.
Mm-hmm. Actually, yeah, we were guests in Yokohama with them and guests in Tokyo. And that's, if you ever want to be a guest somewhere, go to Japan. They treat you so nice.
They gave us strawberries that were this big in the middle of winter.
Nice.
Oh, it was just amazing.
Yes.
And those fans are beautiful too. Mm-hmm. The dragons.
So this is
those
one.
Those are from Thailand.
This is one group of men. These are from Yokohama. And then I have another group of men on a boat somewhere.
Oh, right here.
These are all from Yokohama. I don't know. Things get moved around, but
no,
I know that this
moved
guy
30 years.
Okay, so this is what they call the Yakuza, some of these fellows. This is the godfather.
Don't touch it, please.
Yes, he touched it, folks, because he's a guy.
Uh-huh. Jeez.
So what's behind you here in this cabinet?
Oh, this is interesting. So
see,
all these images. Yeah, there's some tattoo instruments in here from Borneo and Iban and Indonesia.
Dayak.
And then these are the designs, and they take them from nature. Part of the design is taken from grasses. Some of their things rot so quickly that they make totems out of weaving blades of cane or grass. And when the open ends are kind of laid out, they make these sharp points. And so they tattoo that same way. They carve it in all parts of their life, and it brings good luck and safety and wealth or whatever. But that's a real headhunter's head there, and that's carved with a tattoo design on top of it. We have a friend who works at the Smithsonian, and part of his job is to repatriate things that have been moved from the original places.
But only in America.
Only in America.
Or the Native Americans.
Mm-hmm. But someday, yeah. I'm going to take that back to the jungle. We rescued this from a...
No, I'm not going to take it back to the jungle.
Someday. It's a good story. Quit screwing up your story. No, anyway, that's...
I had to get it here.
Anyway, so we're talking about drums. So Chinchilla had this drum from Borneo years ago.
No, not Borneo.
Papua New Guinea?
I think I got it in Sydney.
Yeah, but it came from Papua New Guinea. But we're talking about drums earlier, and it's a snake skin on it. And that's been that way since she's had it, which is 40 or 50 years.
Yeah.
We're just jumping all over the place.
Yeah, you got a totem pole. And...
Oh, there's so much.
Yeah,
this right here.
Oh, yeah, that's getting...
This is fascinating.
Ceremonial tattoos.
This is tattooing, and we were tattooed by hand by the two masters in Japan.
And then there's something from a temple down there that I was tattooed in a temple, rural Thailand.
I was tattooed with this.
And prayers. It's like a Catholic mass or something, because you have all these monks chanting and lots of incense. And the whole layout of the temples are very similar to a cathedral or something. And it was fun. Mm. Yeah, my legs hurt. I'm not good at sitting on cement with my legs crossed. There's some pictures of us getting tattooed in the jungle by a shaman here.
Of you.
And that was pretty interesting, too, because we had to go through a whole ceremony of any kind of great reports where you feed the whole village, and then they tell your fortune by reading the entrails of an animal, and then we had to make an offering to the spirits, and that was set over in a certain area. And those spirits like money and cigarettes.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, and so, and then these are machines here that came unmolested. They're in the original state that they would have been in the 1920s, 1940s. They're all represented in catalogs that you could buy. We have three sets there, which is really hard to find a complete set of something like that. We're talking about monks tattooing, so there's a monk's t-shirt. That,
it's like a vest.
Yeah, he would wear to tattoo someone with.
This right here.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't call it a t-shirt.
No, it's an undergarment is what I meant to say. And
so let's see what the next room holds.
Yeah, the next room is twofold. Again, we just overlap. So here's some European tattoo machines here.
This is very significant. These are Native Americans from Minnesota, from California, from Washington, from Covelo. They all have what's called their markings on their chin. They're called the 111 or the Great Flood Mark. So if there's a flood, the water will stop right here. It's also for beauty. And these vary in thickness. And the most interesting thing is, this is Native American. As we go up over the door are Eskimo women that have these markings on their chins as well. And then we're going to Japan.
To Asia,
Yes, to the Ainu. And these women are marking their faces, their lips. And then we're going over to Morocco, where they're marking their faces. And then we're going to go across there to New Zealand, all the way to New Zealand. And all of these women were marking their lips and their chins, independent of each
other. All the other tribes.
Before... Yeah. There was even explorers that went to these countries and
it's
documented
ancient,
anything.
Very similar.
I mean, it gives me chills every time I think about it.
Yeah, I've read that there's certain tribes around the United States where they had similar sounding words with the same meaning, even though there are different parts of the continent.
Yeah.
And they never communicated whatsoever, paths never crossed. So how did that happen?
I love that.
Yeah, it's unifying.
Yeah, really old story and really old records, whether it be in pictographs or just verbal history is very... This all connects with that concept of the migration of humans around the world.
So I see a lot of masks straight ahead.
Uh-huh, that's...
Those are from Papua New Guinea. But I got those in Sydney, Australia, over 50 years. Over 50 years ago.
That's pretty narrow in there, so I'll let her go in and talk about Auschwitz and everything. Well, that's that whole wall is on that side is about tattoos against one's will.
Uh-huh, this exhibit is,
forced tattooing for slave marking or property.
Yeah, it's also called punitive tattooing, and it's been done for centuries. When we think about tattoos that are done without consent, we immediately think of Auschwitz and the Holocaust.
The numbers.
Yeah, but that's pretty contemporary compared to what had been going on centuries before that in all the countries of the world, Japan and Greece and just...
Native Americans here.
Yeah.
Or First Nations.
It's fascinating how tattooing was used to identify a criminal or a spy or an adulterer or
the
whatever.
The scarlet letter.
Exactly. Exactly.
And Chinchilla just couldn't wait to do some with barbed wire.
Yes.
Well, talking about Auschwitz, I mean, it's appropriate. So.
It is.
Really hard to research Auschwitz because they closed that down for so long. Henry Weisenthal. They helped
Simon Weisenthal.
Yeah. They helped her with a little bit of research on it. They sent their records of what some of the numbers meant.
I have those here. This is the most disturbing part of the entire museum right here. This is a chronicle of tattoos that were done on human beings. How many got them. The Zygoni, the gypsies were called Zygoni, and they got a Z with numbers on them, tattooed on them. And just different dates, just a few dates, and 20 women were tattooed, or a baby was tattooed with this number. And they keep track. On May 16th, it said that there was a baby girl in 1944 that had been tattooed with a particular number. For some reason, I resonated with that because I'm from 1946. That could have been me. I considered her my sister, my family. So I'm a Jewish girl. I found her number, and I contacted the Simon Wiesenthal Human Tolerance, and they looked her up, and she had been put to death with only a number. So I took that number, and I had it tattooed on my arm, just in memory of her, and gave her my aunt's name, Rose.
Nice.
But this is an amazing chronicle right here from 1939 to 1945.
I'll tell you something that's even sadder. In high school, a boy I went to high school with, his mom was in a camp, and he said that she had numbers on her wrist.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at me and he says, "That was some war. I don't know what war it was." I looked at him, "Seriously, you don't know what war?"
Oh, God.
He was really cute, but I thought, no, that was a deal breaker. So I walked away. Even age 16, I knew, no. Yeah. I said, ask her. You need to have a conversation with your mother.
You had relatives, too, Chinchilla, right?
Yeah. Got a section here of tattooing in the gulags in Russia that's very disturbing as well.
Yeah.
Cindy Ray is an Australian tattooer. And she's on the cover of a book that we did, Electric Tattooing by Women. And this is her machine and a book she wrote and picture of her. She was considered the tattooed lassie with the what chassis?
Some chassis, yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, she was
taking
she
advantage
was in her
of
heyday,
well.
But she was in her heyday in the 60s and the Summer of Love and all that. She's real good friends with Lyle Tuttle. She's been in that the business for a long time. She still tattoos. She's in her 70s.
Yeah, she's not too much older than me.
Mid-70s, yeah.
Yeah.
I have to watch that when I say you're in your 70s.
Yeah, you don't say old. There's still another room here.
Okay.
I'm
right behind you.
Part of our museum as well. And after hours, people can have a bath, a bubble bath.
Yes, we're in the bathroom, listeners.
Mm-hmm. These pictures here are all of tattoos that Mr. G and I have done. And when we first moved into this town in 86, it was a logging town, redneck town. Yeah,
the mill was still running.
Yes, it was for a long time while we were here. Oh my God, we were breathing all that. But we were not really considered artists by the artists in Mendocino. And so what I did is I photographed the tattoos we had done, put them in this form, and invited people to an exhibition. And we started First Friday. I don't know if you've heard of First Friday, but we started that.
Nice.
With some other artists who have passed on since. They came and they saw. They believed us then. It made us more credible to them. I felt it was important that they knew that
it is art.
It's the mother art. You know, it's the first art where we started engraving our bodies.
During our sit-down interview, the couple invited their pooches in, so you'll probably hear a little canine noises in the background. So how many rooms are there actually total in your home/museum/tattoo parlor?
We've never counted them.
Seriously?
No. I know there's close to 2,000 square feet.
Total.
That's with the stairway. Yeah.
Counting bathrooms? So six out front, is it? Seven with the hallway. Eight, nine, 10, 11, 12 or 13 different rooms, including.
So you have lots of wall space to
We've
display
got lots more room.
Because of all the rooms.
Well, it's a little much, I guess. We're thinking about that now that we're getting a little more mature, what to do with it all.
Well, you must have a lot of takers, people who would volunteer to...
Maybe we don't even talk about that yet.
Oh, we just inherited how many paintings? Like 50 paintings that are pretty nice, framed paintings that someone left behind. That same way, they had so much stuff, they just left. And here, clean this up, you can have everything.
Let's start with the most commonly asked question, probably. What was your first tattoo and where on your body did you get it?
My first tattoo was on my shoulder, which is a nice place to get a tattoo. And I was 21 years old, 23 years old. And it was the first tattoo shop I ever saw. I had an uncle that was tattooed and would raise his shirt up and say, "Don't you ever do that." So first time I saw a tattoo shop, I had that tattoo.
And what was it?
It was just a little rosebud. And that was just all I could afford. But before they were done, I picked a big dragon off the wall. And they said I had tattoo fever and I had to come back the next day. That was good marketing because I came back with five people the next day. I was so excited.
And where was this?
Cincinnati.
Cincinnati. And how about you, Madam Chinchilla?
I was 25 years old. I was a wild hippie girl. And I used to paint a little black heart on my cheek. And I went into, well, that's when tattoo artists were on the bad part of town, First Avenue, Seattle. I went into this place that had plywood hammered on the outside. And he was kind of scary for me. He was really kind of mature. And so I wanted him to tattoo a black heart on my cheek, but he wouldn't do it. He had social responsibility at that time. And I'm really thankful for that. Over 40 years later, I thanked him for that. Anyway, he did the black heart on the palm of my hand. And he said that it wouldn't stay because of the quality of the skin. It's always sloughing off there. I would have never known that I would be using this for all these years to show people why we didn't tattoo the hand. Yeah, it's really interesting.
The first time I saw a tattoo in person was one of my grandfather's, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was in the Navy.
Oh.
And he later regretted it. Because mm-hmm. That was a damn stupid thing to do. I shouldn't have done that.
What was it?
Mostly he got that attitude because my grandmother said
exactly.
It was a damn stupid thing
exactly.
to do. But he had a massive ship on his chest.
Oh.
And
do you have a picture?
No, you don't take pictures.
They would have never done
no.
that.
But I remember it really well. So it was really large. It took up almost his entire chest. And he would flex his chest muscles. So it looked like it was rocking on the waves. And then he had a hula dancer on one arm.
Oh.
And same thing, flexes muscles. It looked like she was doing the hula dance.
Was he in the service?
Yeah, he was in the Navy.
In the war? Or?
No, 20s.
In the 20s, okay.
Yeah, he almost got sent to China, but then they settled.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't get that.
Well, that was common to put him down for it. I had a great uncle that was heavily tattooed. I never saw a tattoo. I didn't even know it.
The problem was, though... The reason I bring this up is because as he got older, all those colors ran together.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no image there that you could pick out at all. It was just a mass blur of dark colors. And that small little heart on your palm from the heel of your hand, even though it's kind of faded, you still can see it. And you still know what it is because it's just a single one color image. Have you ever had older people... Mention tattoos that have just kind of blurred over the decades.
Well, we've got them.
We've seen some beautiful tattoos.
I'm one of them.
Yeah, she's got one that's migrating. They call that migrating because the skin regenerates. And so every time it regenerates, it changes. Your skin changes and it adopts those little particles of pigment. It's not liquid. It's dry little particles that the skin keeps adopting. And as your body changes, it adopts it in different places.
And we're losing collagen as well, so that precipitates all of that from happening, making everything blur out. That used to be a dragon on my wrist. Beautiful dragon. One of the first tattoos
change, and it has a lot to do with other people's perception of your tattoos. Like you said, your grandmother didn't like his tattoos. And that happened a lot with people getting tattoos and then it was a point of contention and they weren't popular. And so it was a kind of a...
Well, she didn't like his handwriting either, and she made him change that.
Oh, my. So if you had a right hand...
She had a strong personality.
The oldest tattoo I ever saw was a man who was tattooed when the Panama Canal opened in 1912, 1914.
Yeah, the tens or something, yeah.
Yeah, so he went and he volunteered. He was from Sweden, and his nickname was Swanee, and he lived in Fort Bragg. Your uncle might know him because he was a local...
Grandfather.
He might know him because he used to walk somewhere from over here by the mill, and he would walk by our tattoo shop, and he was 92, and he'd been tattooed in the teens. His tattoos were beautiful to me, but I knew what they were because I could see them, and we took a bunch of photographs of these old tattoos.
He's in the museum.
Yeah, but it was so fun to see that guy, and then he used to go to the Tip Top every day and have a pint, and they didn't come anymore, and he passed of old age.
Who was the first woman that you ever met, Madam Chinchilla, who had a tattoo?
Gee, no one's ever asked me that question. I don't know. I started this when I was 40. But before I was 40, I would see biker chicks. Okay, I did. I'd see biker chicks with tattoos and tattooed arms, yes. And I grew up in a little box and I was not real open-minded and I found it kind of disgusting in a way. It's horrible.
Well, you're not alone. That's taboo.
Yeah, I was socialized, heavily socialized.
Yeah, all kinds of little taboo things make you almost sick.
You're right. Yeah, mm-hmm. So it was the biker chicks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Either one of you remember reading Ray Bradbury's The Illustrated Man?
More the movie than reading it, but I did read it. I didn't get it when I read it. And then when I saw the movie, it was kind of corny or old. It wasn't a new movie.
It didn't age well?
It didn't age well. I think it was early 60s or something like that. So I've read parts of that since then. It's very fascinating now that and then the people that did that movie did placements of his tattoo very authentic. That was one thing that was done correctly, was the placement for the movie.
And of course, there's all these stories that accompany tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
Some are the most on a dare. Or a rite of passage, as we were talking earlier. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's the loss of a loved one or the celebration of births.
Mm-hmm.
I've met many women who have had their children's names
tattooed
on themselves. And, of course, surviving terminal illnesses, alleged terminal illnesses, because they're still surviving that,
mm-hmm.
as you know, Madame Chinchilla, with the breast cancer that you've endured. And I was wondering if any stories in particular have kind of stood out for you that you've... maybe that you hadn't heard before, that were a little out of the more common stories. Right. Backstory for a particular tattoo.
Oh, stories that had, why it had a meaning to someone? Or...
Yeah.
Oh, you know, the in-memory ones that you've done on those two men who had lost their sons. Those were...
They came in together?
Intense. No, they're two separate men.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, they mourned their sons so... Oh,
yeah, they were...
It was painful for us.
Very deep. And I was close to both of them.
And they had their sons' images tattooed. You know, I mean, Mr. G did portraits of their sons' faith. One of the sons was laying down in the coffin as a tattoo on his back.
I did a back piece from a picture of him laid down on the deathbed.
Oh, God.
And then I made it into a Viking, kind of a Celtic church scene with him laid, but turning into marble, where he went from marble and the rock, started out with cemetery, been vandalized. And then the rocks came up and it was like a crypt with a sun on it. And then a lot of Celtic runes and things in the background. They were both my friends and they both lost their son.
Oh, he even had red teardrops tattooed on his face.
Yeah, it just became an obsession almost. It wasn't a single tattoo. It was an enduring thing, a whole process, a long process.
They were beyond sentimental.
Yeah,
it was disturbingly so.
Could not let go.
No, and it was hard to be around because it was such a bummer. You know, I've tattooed a Lakota elder.
Oh, yeah.
And things that he told me about the ceremony and how important it was to smudge and to smudge my room, because there's a lot of connection to that grief and all that, that I needed to smudge my room more often. And they make the smudge out of a certain plant here on the coast.
Sage?
No, it's not a sage. It's just a common, I forget the name of it, but he brought me in a branch of that and put it up in my room because it has healing properties and stuff. But it was real important that when we do those memorial things in his culture to not take on all that darkness, I guess is a good way of putting it. So that's probably the biggest story that I had heard. I like to be lighter, fun with tattoos. Tattoos used to be fun.
Well, they still are.
Yeah. No, I like silliness and rebellion. That's the thing that I like. So some of the silly tattoos are...
The rat on the eight ball, mm-hmm. Mr. G. If we've got a bunch of people in here on a weekend, tourist, Mr. G will come in and say, anybody want a rat on an eight ball? And they'll all look up.
Or they'll have their kids or 9 or 10. I go, do you want a skull tattoo? Of course they do. Or a pirate tattoo.
Yeah.
So great insight into people to be tattooing, because you get to hear their story a little bit. And just so
see, and I'm all about the stories.
Oh, yeah. And it's very interesting to meet people and stuff and across different social stratas and religions and backgrounds.
But it's all the same, really, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. we're all human, the same mm-hmm. qualities.
And we kind of control that. You do things, too, that with your healing and ceremonies, that you kind of control that in a way that makes it work for you and the person. So we just learned. That was a neat thing about taking an apprenticeship, was learning the old way and learning what to avoid and what not to do and how to control situations. And a lot of these young people are teaching each other. They've only tattooed 6 months, and it's just getting watered down so much that I don't know where they'll end up, but it was nice to be able to see these shops that were in San Francisco forever, and they were affected the same style and way of running a shop as they were before San Francisco was even a big city. It was in the 49er era.
The Barbary Coast.
The Barbary Coast, and that's where the shops were down there.
And then the two of you have traveled, maybe lectures and so on. I know I shouldn't assume, but I am assuming that you visited tattoo places and various places that you visited. And mm-hmm. any place in particular, or maybe specific tattoo artists that really impressed you, that they were doing something a little different than you had seen before?
Well, I think the most enlightening is visiting the masters, because it's, you know, they're just doing them still by hand and doing them the way they were done 400 years ago.
Who are you talking about?
About Horitoshi.
Horitoshi and Horiyoshi. All right.
So that's the most impressive, just makes drops your jaw. We're not the only ones that make pilgrimages there, but...
We were some of the first Americans that,
and then,
that did.
For new ideas and stuff, I think we get visitors that come in and just blow our mind. There's so much good talent. Some of them have been encouraged with art backgrounds, and they have a natural talent, and then they just are not limited by the old ways. So they're just blowing out all these, just doing such fine art. It's gorgeous.
And integrating a little bit with the old, mm-hmm. but with the new. And
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's why they come here. They want to kind of touch bases with the old, and they'd like to come and study the history. Some of them are from crazy cool cities like Vienna, Austria, and some friends that came over from Slovenia, Italy.
What made you decide to settle down here and have a tattoo place?
She likes it here.
Yeah, well, I lived in Albion, and Mr. G came there and we met, and I like it around here. It's the only place I ever felt like I could be me, you know? When I first came here, I went and got a job at the Mendocino Hotel, and I had 4 earrings, and I was hippie, and I tried to look straight, and I said, well, I'll take these earrings out. And they said, no, they're beautiful. You just be who you are. And it was the only place where I felt like I could really just be who I was. And I think that's why a lot of us stayed around here, because it was okay.
How did you find this particular spot? I mean, what was it that spoke to you?
This building. Oh, well, Mr. G and I, our first studio was in the Airstream trailer we created. We didn't even show you that part of our history. It's in my studio. Our Airstream trailer, it's gorgeous. We'd go to the art center and do a fair and go to a bike run and did that. And then around the corner on Laurel Street, where the real estate office is now, that little place across from the bookstore, it used to be a barber shop in 1986. And somebody called us up and said, hey, the barber died. You ought to just move into that and have a street shop. And so we did. We're walking around, and I saw there was a for rent sign here 3 years later.
Now, when the two of you met, were you each doing tattoos at that point?
No, I wasn't even interested in it. I found it very disturbing.
We had met and fell madly in love. So I moved down here, and I had been doing construction, building skyscrapers and hoped fancy interiors like in the Four Seasons and everything. I was doing some real high-end carpentry in Seattle. It was top of the pay scale of the whole United States. It was top. I met the pinnacle of my career. And then I was coming down here, and I just didn't want to prove myself again as a carpenter, because you just gotta, I was starting all over again. I was going, no, I sold a sailboat. I lived in a sailboat in Seattle, so
for
I sold
10
that,
years.
And so I was getting some balloon payments and unemployment. And I thought about it before I even moved down here. I went and talked to some people in Seattle about being a tattoo artist, and they said, you need to take an apprenticeship. We moved down here, and one of Chinchilla's neighbors was tattooed, and the same person's name came up. I called him up and said, I'd like to take an apprenticeship. And he says, money talks and bullshit walks, and it's $2,500. And I said, sold America. So I went and gave him all cash up front.
Well, you sold your
windboard. I sold some things. Yeah, I had a windsurfer ice boards that with the tails on it. Gave him the cash, and Chinchilla's freaked out because I didn't get a receipt or anything. I said, no, it's a handshake thing. This guy's going to be my teacher.
God.
I don't need a damn-ass receipt. And he says, just because you give me this money doesn't mean that I can't throw you out of here. He says, if I throw you out, you're going right through that plate glass window. And it's like, cool. I like that kind of shit.
And on this man's door, okay, this place we went to was an old house.
It was a motorcycle clubhouse.
Yeah. Oh, God, an open sewer in the yard. And on the door it says, if you fuck with my stuff, I'll fuck you up. And I saw that, and I just started crying and begging Mr. G, please, let's go. This is not our kind of people. No, serious. I felt that way, you know.
Well, we didn't fit in. I went down there with a Billy Idol spike haircut.
Yeah, and I had Bermudas.
I had Ocean Pacific brand new shorts on and clothing and nice shoes, and I didn't fit in at all. These guys are all greasy and...
Oh, and the women, ooh.
Well, they were doing all kinds of stuff there, but
yeah.
It was like, yeah, the sheriff, we went down there to work, and I get calls on the phone that they were trying to call people in the clubhouse there to tell them that, you tell that bitch Sue, I know she's wearing my goddamn bikini, I'm going to beat the shit out of her when I get out of jail. Okay, how do you spell that?
Oh,
so it was just a scene, yeah. It was cool. It was a great learning curve.
It was. It was really good.
For her especially. I mean, she's never been around that.
Never.
And I've been around that in construction, so I knew it was all bullshit drama. And
oh, man.
Career changes.
To say the least.
What color is your parachute? Because I know there's women everywhere wondering, well, how do you wear something low cut and you have something maybe disappears off the side and doesn't make sense that there's... Do you have one that tell one story or...
Oh, it's not. It's just decorative.
Okay.
It's purely decorative with some prayer, little Thai prayer and a heart and a kanji.
So it isn't one. It isn't like one story. They're all little bits and pieces.
People will say, they'll come in and they'll say, oh, I've got 14 tattoos. How many do you have? And I'll say, well, I have one tattoo. I have one skin. I have one tattoo. And they go, oh, I never thought about it that way. Yeah. So my surgeon is who made this work. And okay. I didn't even know until all the bandages and tubes were taken out 2 weeks later, you know. And I looked and she had cut right under the tattoo. And it didn't even look like I was missing anything.
Nice.
It was incredible. Dr. James, Linda James.
Do you think if it was a male surgeon, he would have big tongue?
I have no idea. I really don't know.
I suspect not. I think women are more aware of details.
She was very like aware of detail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have a fashion sense. And
yeah, an awareness is just different from mm-hmm. men. What's the youngest age that you worked on? Because I'm, again, assuming that there's probably laws that...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 18 is the
18
law.
Is the, okay.
And then I think chinchillas... 13. Broken the law a couple times with yeah. friends' children.
Yeah, very
if they're
important.
mature and it's an important
there
one.
Were spiritual reasons for that. Mm-hmm. Young, real spiritual kids that were like 12 and 13, and one of their aunties had died. These are really, truly spiritual kids. You know, they weren't just pretending to be so they could get a tattoo. And the tattoos that I did were... I did two, just because people had died in their family. Do the cherry blossom, Japanese cherry blossom, is significant. It signifies the beauty, the transience, and the fragility of life.
Now, when you work on someone that young, they may still be growing.
They are.
So that would affect the tattoo, I would imagine.
Not terribly, because a lot of these old men that we see with skinny pinups on their arms, and they'll say, oh, when I got that,
at
you know, 15, I was built.
I got that, yeah,
yeah. yeah.
She was voluptuous when I had this.
Yeah, yeah. And it just grows and shrinks with you. If someone's pregnant, the tattoo will grow and shrink back. Or no, it was all right.
But skin is only elastic up to a certain age, and then it doesn't return to its original form or image.
No, but these people, their cellular structure just kept growing, and the tattoo grew with it, and it was fine. For centuries, young girls were tattooed when they started their flow, and the young boys were tattooed when they went out and killed a bear, or went on a walkabout, or so it's rite of passage. I like that. I don't really like the 18-year-old law, but we're a whole different mentality now, of course.
You can't think for yourself. So what are some myths, let's say, about tattooing that you would kind of like to clear up?
I think the biggest myths were the health concerns in the AIDS era. There was never any cases of AIDS that came from tattooing. And there's still a lot of myths about diseases. That doesn't mean you shouldn't be careful. There's really no reason to be risky with it, but there was a lot of false information put out about health problems. And they're still issued today. About once a year, there's a study out talking about hepatitis C, and it's put out by an outfit out of Texas. It's super right-wing religious, what do they call that, evangelistically religious. And they have this study that they made up that's not even scientific. And if you look at the AP article, it comes out every year, it'd be in the Fort Bragg News. And I go, oh, here comes that one. They pepper it a little more with some other myth about the pigment going into the lymph glands and this and that, which it does, but it doesn't cause any harm. You should be concerned, but there's been more problems with the fake tattoos. They were using a black hair dye from Asia that has fennel in it, which destroys, so that the dye goes in the hair, it kind of damages the hair a little bit.
The follicles.
So then they were using that over in the Mediterranean, down in Mexico and different places that Europeans were going. There was people that had to have their arms amputated and stuff from a helpless little, just seemed like nothing, but they were getting that dye put on their skin, and they happened to have a horrible sunburn allergy to that. And
another myth that I bought into is anybody that had tattoos was really wild, you know? And so when I tattooed somebody, when I was tattooing, a lot of the women would say to me, they'd say, "You're so different than I thought you'd be." And I'd say, "Well, what did you think I'd be?" And they said, "Well, I thought you were probably on a lot of drugs and did sexual orgies and all this stuff, right?" And I said, "No, no, none of that, you know."
What
and so that's
said.
And I used to feel like tattooed women were like that too.
Well, they used to have art. We had art shows up here, and I would hear people downstairs going, "Oh no, I'm not going up there." It was kind of fun. When we were on the side street, on Laurel Street, it was kind of funny too, because there was a whole trend of Satanism and child abuse, abduction. A lot of exaggeration was going on, and
in this town, yes.
Well, not and just in general, they were just talking about Geraldo was on, and they were going and busting these cults or devil worshippers or whatever. So they thought that we were devil, and then the door would be open in the summertime. They go, "Look, Satanist." So that would crack us up. It was real funny.
Now, when someone is going to have a tattoo for the first time, because there are, unfortunately, we're talking about, you know, health issues, and in theory, mm-hmm. all tattoo mm-hmm. artists do sterilize their instruments.
Oh, yeah, that's...
But what would be some good questions to ask the tattoo artist when you're going in for the first time, if you haven't gone to that person before?
Well, I think it's important to inspect their facility and just check out their portfolios and see what kind of work they've done. And for health reasons, they should be licensed and legitimate, not in some back alley somewhere or motel room or something like that.
Back of a van.
Yeah, at a kitchen table, cousins, friends from just got out of prison.
Although we have tattooed where we've set a chair up
in a kitchen. Yeah.
Well, out in the desert and hooked up to a taxi cab mm-hmm. battery, you know, right outside or in a bar. We've tattooed mm-hmm. in bars in Mexico. We've done everything that we've...
Thailand.
We've been in Thailand. Yeah, we've tattooed a lot of different places that...
But we're talking about paying customers coming in.
Well, for the first time, they may be nervous and...
Mm-hmm. Oh, here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's different in America.
I think...
It's a lot different in America.
I think the first time is... The best question is to feel comfortable with the people. And you don't have to feel like you have to do it. You can always take your time, be slow with it, and feel good about the person you're being with.
So do you have any favorite quotes about tattoos?
Oh, think before you ink. Absolutely.
Do something different. Check out the unusual museums in your part of the world.